And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is March 7, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Today, on the eve of the International Day of the Woman, we are going to talk to a special guest, and he might be giving us some advice, to especially to us women, to how to handle things. You know, without waiting much, he's on the line, and I'm so happy to have him today. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ollie. It's a great pleasure for me to be here.
Thank you so much. Nathan Oswald is a young boy, but probably with a lot of experience, because from the second that I spoke to him, I understood that he has a glimpse of understanding of how complicated life is and how we can make it better. And we women, we can use any advice to get our life better and less complicated. Nathan, tell us about it.
Well, actually, I think I've learned more from women than I have to teach women. But now that I've said that early, I will share with you and your listeners what I've come to. My program is called Small Steps, Big Life. I think that all of life is nothing but a series of small steps that lead us to living the life of our dreams, the life of us living fully realized, actualized lives. And what gets us into trouble is when we try to take big steps, when we try to do big things too quickly. We just can't, that's not how we're designed. So everything that I sing about and that I speak about is to remind people to take smaller steps.
I see that, especially, you know, when we are trying to get ourselves into a career or into a life of, you know, a grown-up life, we take responsibility, like we want to buy, the big house first instead of building up the building block of life. I second that, no question about it. Now, Adam, tell me, in this mix of the universal chaos that we all live in, a small step, meaning actually a route, because you have to think about the route ahead and say, let's take a small step. Would you say that that's correct? How you can detect the step when you want to fulfill, you know, your road? What do you have to break your dream to pieces? Or like, let's say we're fixing a house, let's take one room at a time. How do you do that?
Well, I think the most important thing, Orly, is for us to listen. I think what really makes it hard for us to move forward is we don't listen. We're too busy being in reaction. I think the first thing that we need to do is to stop and listen. And there are lots of ways we can do that. There's been a lot of talk about people learning how to meditate. Meditate is just learning how to focus on doing one thing at a time. So if you can give all of your attention to doing the dishes or all of your attention to being in whatever activity you are in, you will slow your mind down and you will be able to make decisions much more easily. So you'll know how to move forward on those bigger things, like what to do next on the house or what school to enroll the children in or whatever the challenge may be.
All right. So you're saying one thing at a time, once we are listening. I second that. Now, how do you apply this? Let's say if people want to understand how you work, they're going. Do you have a website or that they can check it out and see what you have on it and talk about? Because
yes.
You know, we understand. We all are pretty. This is a new generation, especially the youngster. When you're trying to teach them, they know it all. Everything is in the palm of their hands. They don't need us anymore to convince them to understand. The only time they ask for advice is when they get in trouble. So You tell me how you get into the people understanding to consciousness to understand how to work it out.
Well, I do what I can in my part of the world, and I travel quite a bit. I'm based in Vancouver, Canada. I travel a lot in the States and in Canada, and my girlfriend is American, and she's a professional speaker, and I've actually traveled to 7 different countries with her. And so I spread my message wherever I can of small steps, big life. My website is nathanaswell@nathanaswell.com. That's NathanAswell.com.
That's beautiful. Nathan, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I hope that this small step that you take today, talking to us, will bring light. You know, to me, the fact that people, you know, do not listen makes completely sense, because we are rushing. So much information is everywhere. And we're trying to do it all. That's true. Now, I hope that we all start, you know, we all will start concentrating to finish what we start and do one thing at a time, like you advised. And it's especially us women, that we are multitasking all the time. So I appreciate this, and God bless you. I know it's a short one, but once the message is so intense, I want them to all go and check and make friends. And you can post it also on my page in Facebook, you know, The Impossible Truth, where you can put it. And I hope that people will interact with it. And I'll pass it along, because it's a good message. So it's a great message. Do you have a...
Thank you.
Tell me.
Thank you, Orly. It's my great pleasure to be on your show. And if I can be of service to any of your listeners, it would be my great pleasure to do so.
God bless you. God bless Canada. We love you, Canada. You guys are great people. We love you. Okay? All of
thank you,
Orly. Loving. Okay. Take
thank
care.
You.
God bless you.
Thank you for all
thank
you do.
Thank you so much.
God bless you, too.
Thank you, Sue.
Bye.
All right, guys. Bye. It was such a beautiful, what a beautiful soul to have somebody who said, hey, you know, wait a second. And you know what? Right on the time, right in God's time to say the right thing at the right moment. You know, Orly, don't take the whole mountain. Take one step at a time. Absolutely right. All right. So we are preparing for the great day tomorrow, celebrating womanhood. And I got some music for you, and I love everyone, and any pick is a good pick, so let's start with some music.
Aren't you something to admire? 'Cause you shine at something like a mirror, and I can't help but notice you reflect in this heart of mine.
All right, and we are back, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth, and I'm from the Holy Land. You know, it's amazing a day. I just came back from, you know, the parliament, the Israeli parliament called the Knesset, and I spent time there with friends, with people, and I was in a meeting. I was in a meeting on a very, very essential issue. It's the building in Jerusalem. It's important to understand that there is so much controversy, and we're going to hear, you know, David Cameron on Jerusalem spot later on. But the idea is that people cannot tell the world, you know, we cannot build in Jerusalem because it's a holy city for everybody. We have to keep on building. At some reason, people don't understand. And tomorrow, when the vice president is going to visit, we're going to start talking about a very important issue. I got this segment for you. Let's listen to this, a short one.
U.S. Vice President Joe Biden prepares for his trip to Israel on Tuesday, March 8th. The trip, which he will take with his wife Jill, will include a meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as a meeting in the West Bank with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. A statement from the White House said the meetings will, quote, discuss our shared regional interests. Obama hopes to see Israel-Palestine relations improve, though he has acknowledged that a comprehensive peace deal is unlikely to form before his time in the White House runs out. Biden's previous and only two trips to Israel as as vice president have been marked by turmoil. In 2014, Biden visited Israel to attend the funeral of former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. During his 2010 visit, Israel announced a new settlement and annexed East Jerusalem, drawing scorn from Biden and introducing an era of tense relations between the U.S. and Israeli governments. For Newsbeat Social, I'm Cambry Caldwell.
All right. We are back. And if we talk about, turmoil, the vice president is already preparing a new one because he is coming with the request to issue permits to build Palestinian houses in Jerusalem. Once you have a contested area, you cannot ask one side to give up his right on one side, on Jerusalem from all cities. Now let's square it right here. And I'm going to talk to you really the way I'm talking to everybody else. I'm going to tell you, Turkey, Jerusalem is a holy city. It belongs to the whole world. However, there is a custodian by biblical connection, by biblical right and duty to Jewish people are supposed to be a custodian. Now, the Christian, which come from the Judeo-Christian belief, they are a part of the continuous effort to be the custodian. Now, the Jewish people have the duty before God. And every time you guys are pushing us, it's like we have to choose before God, between you guys and God, and it's not going to happen. You have to come to terms with understanding that we, the Jewish people, came back to the land of Israel after 2,000 years in the diaspora. It's not a myth. It's a reality we all live in that we need to understand. And you decide that Jerusalem needs to be a part of what? Of an organization that just endorses terrorism. And I don't know who they are. I'm serious. And tomorrow when they're going to visit, I hope that they have a lovely time. This is a, it's a festive occasion. Please don't put this on the table for us to deal with. It's not fair. Don't do that. All right? And give us the freedom to start building, developing, and, making the city the way it's supposed to be. All right? And with love. We want it to be with love, not with force. We had it already. We don't need that. We need now understanding, especially in the time that all the region is in turmoil. You cannot undermine the only country that is a democracy in the region. It's not smart. It's not wise. But, at the end of the day, I'm sure that Israel will have the responsibility she needs to. She will take responsibility over the, areas that needs to be taken care of. And, as long as people don't use arm against the defense, military, I'm sure that we can start setting our way to a new age, to a new day. And if anything will happen, maybe we'll start moving toward, a good place in the universe of, peace and coexistent brotherhood of men. That's what we all pray for. That's why we're here. That's why the Holy Land needs to be holy, all right? Let's get another song for you because their songs are really beautiful today.
Right from the start, you were a thief, you stole my heart, and I, your willing victim. I let you see the parts of me that weren't all that pretty, and with every touch you fixed them.
Now you... What a great song. Guys, I'm sorry to interrupt it, but, we have not much time, and I need to talk to you about what's going on in Syria. So, against all odds, things are looking better. Things that, our emotion, thinks the hope of the people of Syria are, you know, is to rebuild that country. And of course, there is so many players on the ground, a very, very heavy artillery from everywhere. And the fact that the ceasefire is still lasting is like a miracle. So praying for that and praying for that to last and, you know, to a new day to start, let's listen to what we have there.
Turning now to the U.S. and Russian-led agreement to a deal to end the fighting in Syria and give warring parties until Friday to sign up. Will the cessation of hostilities hold long enough for meaningful peace talks to take place? Let's talk about that with Christian Witten, former U.S. State Department senior advisor and deputy special envoy during the George W. Bush administration. He's also the author of Smart Power: Between Diplomacy and War. All right, is this going to work?
It doesn't look like it. There's just a lot that's stacked against it when you look at the odds. The biggest problem is that the agreement doesn't include ISIS, which is a big driver of the Syrian civil war, and doesn't include the Nusra Front, which is the al-Qaeda affiliate. So, you know, looking for a historical analogy where there's been something like this and it has worked, it's really hard. It's sort of as if you were, you know, going back to the Vietnam era and you made a peace deal with the North Vietnamese army, but it excluded the Viet Cong, their major forces here, not at work. And then, of course, there's just the duplicity of the Russians. So you're allowed to still use force. The Syrians, Assad, are both allowed to use force after this agreement, but it's supposed to be proportional to the force they're hit with. But the Russian idea of proportional is going to be a lot different than ours is.
If you were advising President Obama, what would you tell him?
You have to, I think, either just focus purely on ISIS to destroy them and leave the rest of the Syrian civil war to, frankly, its own devices. That sounds bad, I know. It's a humanitarian catastrophe. There are more than 250,000 people killed. But if you look at the record of humanitarian intervention, there's a reason we didn't go into Cambodia right after the Vietnam War, and there's a reason we didn't go into Rwanda in the 1990s despite genocide there, and that is our military cannot be a 911 service for the rest of the world. So focusing on where the U.S. interests are, which are more on destroying ISIS than managing an outcome.
Would you send troops in?
If it's necessary, and I think it probably is, to defeat ISIS, you can't just sort of sit in an air-conditioned hotel room in Abu Dhabi or in Istanbul and say, hey, why don't you people go and do the ground fighting? We'll drop some bombs from our drones, but you need to do the work. I think there has to be some U.S. commitment if you want a real Arab force. They're the fundaments of an Arab force. The Saudis and the Emiratis, the Jordanians, even a little bit from Morocco and Egypt, willing to put some muscle on the ground. So there, it's not just going to be us and sort of a veneer of a coalition. It could be a real coalition. So something, it doesn't have to be a big occupation. Something light footprint. But more important, I think, than whether you put in troops is answering the question, what comes next? I mean, that was the big problem with Iraq, was not a regard for the political outcome, who you want to win. So I think the question of who you want to replace ISIS has to be a confederation of Sunnis. These are not necessarily Boy Scouts, but at least they're not anti-U.S.
Do you think Americans, though, are tired of sending their sons and daughters to die for something so far away?
Yes, I think that's a very justified cause. You know, you look back at Afghanistan and the Taliban is still in control of parts of that country and seems to be mildly ascendant. Certainly the Afghans can't stand on their own. Iraq now is basically three countries and it's hard to point to a clear victory in recent years. I mean, through presidents of two parties now, basically our strategy in dealing with Islamism, or at least dealing with the jihadist end product of that has failed. So I think you go and it's a hard sell to the American public, but by saying that we're not going to jump in and try and manage a civil war, that we're going to focus on a more simple and discreet objective, that is why it's worth putting U.S. lives on the line. And also because they're coming at us. I mean, they hit us right here in San Bernardino.
Christian, the president in his remarks about closing Guantanamo says keeping the facility open is contrary to our values. You agree?
No, I don't. The use of military tribunals for people who are in violation of the law of war is something we've done throughout our history. These would-be defendants have been given already far more rights than we would have afforded people in the past. You know, there were a number of people in World War II who were dressed in U.S., a number of German operatives who were dressed in U.S. uniforms. uniforms, and they were promptly shot. You know, some of the prisoners at Guantanamo, these aren't people who were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. One is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the self-admitted mastermind of 9/11. He has not been read his Miranda rights, or at least wasn't when he made, I think, a lot of his statements. A lot of the information about him is gathered for intelligence. That suits itself towards a military tribunal. Again, something that presidents of both parties have failed to bring about. The guy who basically masterminded 9/11 is just sitting in Gitmo.
So can't you bring him to some strong prison outlet and put him on trial as we do in America? Well, they're just sitting there, right?
Right. I think the argument is, and it's a good one, is that the rules of evidence in a civilian court would just be too high, that you would have a lot of very solid evidence that's accurate, that's factual, that nonetheless would have to be excluded. The other side also, and your previous guest, Senator Mitchell, said that Republicans want to close Guantanamo just because it's being proposed, or don't want to close it because it's being proposed by President Obama. I don't think that's really true. And if you look back, it's actually a Democratic Congress, the first Congress of the Obama administration, when Nancy Pelosi were Speaker of the House, that stopped the president from doing this for a couple of reasons. It's terrible domestic politics. The American people don't want it. But second of all, the claim that this is what's driving jihadism and terrorist recruitment, it's just not so, especially if you look at what captured ISIS prisoners or people who have become disgruntled and left ISIS say. The reason that they were drawn to this has little to do with U.S. foreign policy.
Your work as a diplomat included North Korea. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, it's it gets in the news about twice a year. It's a threat that's grown steadily worse. And people laugh when they had their first nuclear test in 2006. It was considered a fizzle, a very inefficient nuclear shot. But now they're up to about the 10 kiloton range. They've have a series of successes that's just a little bit shy of the 15 or so kilotons in Hiroshima. People used to laugh at their rocket program. Rockets would blow up a few seconds off the launch pad. But you learn information from each of these failures. I mean, if you think about the right stuff, the book or the movie, and all the failures of our programs, and then you have a success. And so pretty soon you're going to get a North Korea that can put a miniaturized nuclear weapon on an ICBM and hit the West Coast, and the U.S. Combatant Commander in Korea has basically said they've gotten...
All right, that was Politica of, Mr. King. I think that one of the greater, TV host was Larry King, and he's still keeping it on the internet, which is something that's wonderful because we all can tap to it whenever we want. And the truth of the matter is we're all concerned about the Syrian situation, and especially when there are so many people in action. Now, we have to come to terms with the fact that the inability of the leadership, world leadership, to do anything to improve the situation or to give an engine of growth to any of the continents will result in making things worse. We know that there is a lot of concern in Europe about all those immigrants and all the refugees that are going there. We know that America is, the U.S. is in, quest for a new leader. The new president, presidential election is taking all the efforts of all the government apparatus. But there is one apparatus that's still working, because the U.S. strike at the training camp in Somalia, they report on Monday. So that the world is still in control because people, if the USA thinks that we need to strike Al-Qaeda camp in Somalia, it means that there is somebody is watching, which is good. I don't know what was there, but 150 fighters of Al-Qaeda Islamic group got killed. And that probably was a hard work of intelligence and a large scale of understanding. There is a report from it in their World News report. So I think that there is something going on in Somalia, especially when they capture a boat. The Australian Navy says that this is a huge weapon, about that was added to Somalia. So pay attention, you all. We need to understand that people are the group are working wherever they need to work. You understand? Wherever you give them a free zone, they'll go and take over. And Africa is a place where no much control was, but I guess that they check it out. Somalia is on the watch right now. So I think that we need to work some understanding, but we need to create some growth, some engine of doing. It's enough. We're standing, we're fighting, and we are, you know, fighting physically, mentally, and we're all concerned about one thing when we need to go forward or to check if where we can fix stuff. We need to do something, but right now it seems like little is being done. And, you know, I have a Margaret Thatcher segment that I want you all to listen, where she talks about growth, and hope we can listen to all of it. But if not, it's online, and I'll post it again. But let's listen to Margaret Thatcher, you know, for this beautiful Woman Day tomorrow. She's an example to follow.
Interviewing a friend is not easy, especially when that friend is the First Lady and when your questions aren't all that friendly. Well, last Tuesday afternoon in the upstairs living room at the White House, we talked with Nancy Reagan, a friend for 35 years. 1981 has been a happy year and a sad one for Mrs. Reagan. First, her husband's arrival at the presidency after years of striving, the two of them together, and then the shock of the assassination attempt. And since then, troubling controversy about the expensive White House renovation and the new White House china. Americans' feelings about Mrs. Reagan were reflected this past week in a Newsweek magazine poll. 57% of those questioned approve of the way that Mrs. Reagan has been handling her responsibilities as First Lady. But at the same time, 62% feel that she overemphasizes style and elegance at a time of federal budget cuts and economic hardship, and that she is less sympathetic to the problems of the poor than other First Ladies have been.
You're really hurt by some of the press that you've been getting. I mean, hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And were you unprepared for the scrutiny that you were going to get?
Yes, I really was. Although people, like everything else, had told me. But I really didn't think it would be as deep as it is.
First ladies traditionally have a pretty tough time of it, don't they?
Yes, they do.
I mean, yes, Eleanor Roosevelt, to those who didn't like her, she was a heroine to millions of Americans, and to millions of others, she was a busybody.
But she had a terrible time. She really had a terrible time.
And Pat Nixon was Plastic Pat, and your immediate predecessor was the Iron Magnolia.
Mm-hmm. First ladies, I don't know, it seems to, I've done, you know, a little, everybody's given me books to read, which I've tried to read, and it's fascinating. But they all seem to have those same kind of problems.
Why?
I don't know. This is veering away from what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But along the same subject of First Ladies having a bad time, wouldn't it be nice if we could look at television or read the papers and read something wonderful and nice that's happened? It seems to me that all we read and all we hear are the terrible things that have happened, the nasty things that have happened. I know in today's world the news people have to talk about what's going on in the world, and there are terrible things that are going on in the world right now. But let's have a little balance. Let's try to bring people up and give them some hope and some encouragement and some moral values. Strong letter follows.
I guess what you really want for Christmas is for the press to take a fresh look at you. Really.
That would be nice.
take another look over 1982.
look at what I'm really doing now.
Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mike.
All right, that was the lady Nancy Reagan, God bless her soul, who died yesterday, which somebody that took care of her husband so well. She was a lady by all means and example to all women for leadership position. And anybody who can think about the love that they all share there, she was extraordinary. She was a woman that was blessed to have, a husband to serve that was one of the greatest men in the history of mankind of this period of time. So the world, will stop to think, even that she dies in the age of 94, that the great women are also a factor that we all have to respect. And tomorrow when we start celebrating, or when we celebrate Women's Day, we need to understand how far did we get and how short we are actually in the game, because if you look around, there are a lot of leaders, women leaders all around, in Europe, in America, in Australia, in the Middle East. But the truth of the matter is that the glass ceiling is still there. And in time of worry, women cannot stay back. And sincerely, from my personal, very personal point of view, I cannot stand still when all this mess is going on. I need to shake some major league action to make the difference. Because women have the force and actually have the spirit, the great spirits of a mother. Many men, the things, in the world, it's a man world, and we have all to adapt to the idea that men do carry the load. There's nothing I can do about that. Nothing going to change. But something can change if you let us do our part, and not in your taking away from any man part. It's like do stuff that we can do that otherwise get neglected. Education is one of the issues that get neglected. And of course, it's like teachers and stuff, they give us, the candy and go play. The truth of the matter, we're not happy with that place anymore. We want to have a different understanding. We want an even play, but not the fact that I need to go and carry on a big, heavy duty bag to show that I can be powerful enough. I don't want the masculine side of a man to show that I'm not a man, I'm a woman. You cannot carry, men cannot carry babies. So the game is lost in the beginning for you guys, right? So don't try to challenge us like, oh, you want to be even, though, go get this hard job. No. And I remember when I took flying lessons, I remember opening the oil tank to check the oil. When you go to the plane, you need to check the oil and everything and the gas. And every time it was hard. And I would tell the pilot, my instructor, said, that's why women, we're not as strong. Even our finger, we build differently. Doesn't matter that, we can open the oil trunk. It's not a big deal, especially there are women fighter fire me, and I can understand that. But the truth of the matter is, we are different. We are built differently, physically. Don't challenge us physically. But emotionally, we are equipped to handle the load of the stressful level of situation that we have right now. All right? We are all immersed in incredible chaos. And when Nathan, God bless him, what a great soul, came to tell us all, take one step at a time, yes. But let's divide the work. Let's divide. You know, when we say divide the work, we are looking at people and saying, there is a prime minister of Israel. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu, what a great guy. He's a great guy. Everybody can say that he's a great guy. But for some reason, he thinks that he can be a prime minister, a foreign minister, a secretary for communication, secretary of economy, and something else, and all together. He doesn't want to give anybody else the job. No, he's not going to give anything because he's probably saving the money that we need, expenditure that we need to have. I don't know if he has this elaborate budget for all those things that he can spend, but, you know, every minister has his expenditure. I'm kidding. It's not it. It's not giving others the ability to make a difference. It's going to be a miserable failure for him to keep on doing that and not sharing. It's not sharing. Sharing the load of work. He says today that, you know, the government, the Israeli government, hold the minister office of foreign affairs for Lieberman. So Yvette Lieberman was from the Russian party. And he held it for a year. But the situation was different then. Then it was different. There was no collapse of Syria. There was no war in the north. There was no Russian bombing, you know, on the level of Turkey can get in the war right now. There was not a riot everywhere and people stopped in the... Come on, don't compare. Compare apple to apple. This is the prime minister talking and you know better. And we love him, of course. But God, if he comes short sometimes and he drives us crazy. And for us to walk, of course, to walk, and you could do a great job. But you don't have the time. I remember, you know, and the time in Israel flies. Remember that. It's not Alabama. It's not South Carolina. It is work. And it's working fast. All right? It's the Holy Land. You don't have all the time in the world here. All right? Now it's, you see, time flies. It's over almost. Let's listen to some more music and then we'll get to the next segment.
Same bed, but it feels just a little bit bigger now. Our song on the radio, but it don't sound the same. When our friends talk about you, all it does is just tear me down. 'Cause my heart breaks a little when I hear your name. It all just sounds like
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. That was Bruno Mars. You know, count your blessing every time you see your loved one. Bring her flowers tomorrow. Please don't make mistakes of, you know, I forgot. It's typical. In America, you know, they're pretty good. In Italy, I know for a fact they're really good about that. And especially, I love those mimosas. You know, mimosa, not the drink, mimosas, the flowers. The one, the blue, the yellow one that is really special. And for some reason in Italy, they pick that flower for that day. But whatever it is, as long as you remember that being a woman, it's not so easy by all shape, by all means. So we need the recognition, especially when we are emotionally you know, built different. And I'm not talking that as Andy Kaplan, but you guys understand me. All right, now let's finish with, you know, open bill that I have with David Cameron. Let's listen to what he has to say and my thought after that. Let's listen.
Good morning, you're watching I-24 News. Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron said last night that construction of settlements in East Jerusalem is genuinely shocking a few days after the British government barred public institutions from boycotting Israel. His comments severely critical of Netanyahu's policies were made during a parliamentary session in response to a question posed by opposition Labour MP Imran Hussein, who asked that the Prime Minister agrees that illegal settlements are a major roadblock to peace. And we're joined now via Skype by our London correspondent, Jonathan Sacerdoti. Good morning to you, Jonathan.
Good morning.
So these are obviously very critical remarks by the British Prime Minister. Do you think that they could have any influence on British-Israeli relations?
Well, it really depends on how Israel reacts to these particular statements. In a way, it's nothing new. It just happens that this question was asked of the Prime Minister and he answered it in more forceful terms than usual. Why that could be, no one knows. Some suggest it might be as a sort of softening of the guidance that was issued only last week regarding local councils and other publicly funded bodies and potential for those bodies to engage in boycotts of Israel. The government came out strongly against those and warned that there could be penalties for any that did that. Maybe this was in some way intended to temper that and give a nod to the other side, so to speak. Others maybe think that David Cameron was just reiterating a policy that the British government has held for some time, disapproval over the settlements, and that the language came out a bit stronger than perhaps was intended. It's unlikely that it's meant to signal a particular change or shift in British policy, though.
Yeah, and you're saying it's nothing new, this stance, but considering the tone of his comments, do you think he could push for a change in policy regarding settlements?
I do think it's unlikely that this is a change in policy, seeing as the policy for some time has been that Britain doesn't approve of Israeli settlement activity. In fact, many have argued that this particular government has been the most friendly to Israel in the United Kingdom for some time, but it has always maintained that position, usually doing exactly what he did in this particular instance, where he would say, I'm known for being a strong friend of Israel, but... And then following up with some sort of condemnation of settlement activity. Cameron said that the Jewish presence in Jerusalem is illegal and the settlements there are contrary to international law, effectively. He said that Jerusalem is being encircled, his word. And he said that he's well known as a strong friend of Israel. But this statement left some people in the United Kingdom wondering exactly what sort of friend he actually is.
Mm-hmm. I-24 News correspondent Jonathan Sacerdoti in London. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
All right. So let's talk about David Cameron's statement about Jerusalem. First of all, Jerusalem, by all means, it's not a settlement. You cannot call the holy city of Jerusalem a settlement. Settlement of what? You settle in, let's say, we're not pioneers anymore, but Jerusalem was not recognized by the world as the Jewish capital or the Israeli capital for some reason. And Britain is in the same position of most of the world because it's contentious. For some reason, the difference between, you know, the people of the book, the Bible, and the Palestinian are not on an even field there. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, the Jewish people have a history. It's like comparing what? The Palestinians have, if they are Palestine, it means that they belong in Gaza, and this is it. So they are ancient as the whole biblical history is. But if they are not Palestine that used to be in Gaza, and they claim others because they are the Palestinian, the one that, you know, the territory that was given to the Jewish homeland, and they were cohabited the area because they were nomad from other countries. That's the reality of the situation. They never had a country. Now you're comparing this to the level of, you know, duty that the Jewish people have as a custodian of holy sites and holy city of Jerusalem and the holy land. I don't get it. Now let's talk about what David Cameron said. He said that Jerusalem is not really, you know, it's a settlement, it's not Israeli. Now, does he know that he goes against King George III, that was the one that was actually initiating the ideas of the Jewish land because of the biblical connection? Does he know that the mandate, the British mandate that was given to Britain, the Great Britain, was to facilitate the Jewish land, and the fact that Jerusalem was set out of the equation was not intentional of the British Empire? I don't understand if David Cameron actually is with the game plan of, you know, the monarchy, because he's actually not working on the same page. Because if you go to the pages of history, what the King George III said, it was different. All right, now David Cameron needs to go back and apologize, because he said we are in a very bad situation in East Jerusalem. Well, duh, you don't let us fix it. Every time we put a block of, you know, anything there, cement, you guys are blocking us. So what do you want us to do? You say, tie our end, and then said why you don't build, or why you don't facilitate schooling, anything, infrastructure for the others who live there. You call it Palestinian, I call them Israeli Arabs, okay? And they are Israeli Arabs, because they have the blue, they have the ID. They take Social Security. So it's like, they you know, they even got the, we'll come to you, and they get a passport, or they get their right to take Social Security, but they're not called Brits. What can you do? You guys have to clear that stuff up. Now, the fact that you guys are supposedly going to be with the EU for quite some time now will keep you in the massive, massive, complicated idea of who is actually people of the land and who is not. Refugee situation, like we do have it. So when you talk about Jerusalem, back off. It's the holy city of Jerusalem. It's the holy land. And we are the custodian. You guys have a problem with that? Too bad. All right. So this is it for us, folks. I want to salute you. I want to send all the women in the world Godspeed. Godspeed, womanhood. Be strong. Be healthy. Be beautiful. You deserve it. Use what you have and what the Creator gave you. And a lot of blessing, a lot of praying. Pray hard, because your soul is different. You can pray harder, all right? And with all my love, I want to thank also Doug Newsom, the guy behind the, you know, the microphone that helps me always. And I bless you and I thank you. Thank you, Doug, so much. And I'll talk to you next week. God bless you. Ciao, ciao.